Well, we've done it. We found the worst movie of 2015.
Some old bullshit. Good night, everybody.
We don't do that anymore, Harris.
How about Steaming Pile? Is Steaming Pile an appropriate
You can give it rating? like zero, like 100 Steaming Piles out of 100 or something.
Well, yeah. That'll work.
We do arbitrary review numbers here.
We put number things.
Yes.
By the end, we will come up with a number thing.
We're reviewing Gem and the Holograms, not the original cartoon show, which Kat, I'm sure, will talk about to some degree, but the... I hesitate to even call it an adaptation.
No, this isn't even close to an adaptation.
the theatrical movie that's named Gem and the Holograms.
Yes, the movie with that name that bears absolutely no resemblance to the original property whatsoever.
And I am, of course, Chris, and joined here by my special guests, Kat and Harris O'Malley.
Hey there. Hello.
By the way, check out Harris O'Malley's new book, just out in stores now, under the nom de plume Dr. Nerdlove, which is called...
It's called New Game Plus, A Geek's Guide to Love, Sex, and Dating.
I'm sure you're going to do a future blog post about this movie and how that relates to such things.
Learn from this, Gem and the Hologram.
Yes, never see this fucking movie.
Well, first off, Kat... concisely explain to me the plot of the cartoon, not comparing it to the film, plot of the cartoon.
Okay, just so we have a baseline of where everything is allegedly supposed to come from.
Indeed.
In the original cartoon, Jerrica Benton is the daughter of Emmett Benton, who was the owner of Starlight Music. She and her sister Kimber, along with their two foster sisters, Shayna and Aja, form after her father's death. Jerrica receives a pair of earrings that lead her to a computer called Synergy. Synergy is an artificial intelligence that creates the gem hologram that changes her identity.
Oh, so it's not like makeup and hair.
It is not makeup.
It's all
holograms.
That
is in the movie.
No. Don't get to the movie yet. Okay, the plot of the cartoon.
This is completely different. Yeah. Jem's identity is changed. Her appearance is changed via a hologram, hence the name Gem and the Holograms. And they're all in their, early 20s. Jerrica is old enough to own, at the beginning of the cartoon show, 50% stake in her father's company after he dies. She's an adult. She runs a foster home for girls. She's got, say, 10 or 12 foster girls. Yeah, she's a full-on adult. They're still young enough that they're kind of, they've got that, hopes and expectations for the future kind of thing.
So
they're in their early 20s.
Are the rest of the group, are they her sisters?
Kimber is her biological sister. Aja and Shayna were foster girls that were later adopted.
Okay.
So they are her adopted sisters.
So now let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. So we've got their band.
Yes.
She has a secret identity for the band.
Yes.
Like the Resonance. Yeah. But probably not as good.
Or Hollywood Undead.
Or Hollywood Undead. Or the original Mr. Bungle.
And
so what
secret.
Was the plot of the show?
The plot of the show.
Like on any given episode, they're doing what?
Well... I mean, it's episodic, it's one of those, there's usually, because the whole thing that's missing in this, to make it completely different, is the Misfits.
So, who are an enemy band.
They're a rival band.
I can't believe they didn't even give Glenn Danzig a cameo.
I know. So basically in any given episode, Gem and the Holograms are trying to do their job of being rock stars and... often doing things like charity work and that sort of thing. And the Misfits are trying to one-up them, to get more attention, to be the top band. I mean, they're basically, in the cartoon, she doesn't start off like a total overnight sensation. They're an up-and-coming band.
Right. So they're working for it, and so are the Misfits.
Yeah. Well, the Misfits are already there. The Misfits are already the top act at Starlight Music.
But they're the ones who don't like these new up-and-coming...
Well, I mean, they actually have some pretty good reason, because, in the very first episode, Jerrica refers to them as trash, to their faces.
So wait, secretly, Gem and the Holograms are the bad guys?
Kinda.
Well, no. Just Jerrica had a bitchy moment that set off this whole thing.
I mean, I will say, by everything you're telling me makes me think you could look at that whole thing and go, yeah, this was clearly made by Gems people, because the truth is the Misfits are the victims here.
And admittedly, their songs are better.
Their songs are better. Like, I mean, they both have a kind of amazing, you know.
Was there anything that was like supernatural?
No, it was all aliens technological.
Except for the Yeti.
Well, I mean, that's...
And the time machine.
But it's all technological.
Okay.
It's all technological.
So there is science fiction.
It's total science fiction. Her father creates this big supercomputer, and the whole point in the cartoon of Gem keeping her identity secret is to keep Synergy a secret, because Synergy is basically the most powerful computer in the world,
mm-hmm.
and the idea is, you know, if the wrong people got their hands on Synergy, they could cause a whole lot of trouble and pain, and like they're literally worried about like governments getting their hands on this and using it for like military purposes.
So regardless of anyone's opinions of the quality of the cartoon,
right.
The Gem and the Holograms film is a severely watered down version of that cartoon, in which now the 20-something-year-old girls are in fact 16.
Yeah, there's no way they're older.
And in fact, everything appears to be a promotion for YouTube, as near as I can tell, because the movie's main thing is, oh, if you upload a video to YouTube, they will come.
Yeah, in fact, that actually leads to one of the most unbelievable moments in the entire movie, which is saying something, and that everybody's got a Google Plus account that they're all using actively.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even understand how the film thinks the year is 1998, because it's like populated by YouTube videos that came out like then.
Yeah, you know, none of like them the are background. You have none of like the professional YouTubers that, you know, that have like millions of followers these days.
Yeah.
Nothing that quality.
No, it's stuff that's like 15, 16 years old.
Yeah, and it looks like bad home movies.
That are used as the background soundtrack to the movie.
It is literally, there is padding. There is enough padding in there to make a Santa Claus suit, because I swear to God, half this movie is footage that they either licensed or ripped off Bloody Naked and Screaming from YouTube from 10 years ago.
And you've got Molly Ringwald as the house mom who's I can't figure out why they even bothered getting Molly Ringwald. I mean, you think at the very least throw, if that's her purpose, then throw an 80s nostalgia joke at some point, you know?
The joke is that she's kept all her 80s shit in the garage.
Yeah, perhaps, but
it's truly, truly,
I would have preferred if it turned out like her dead husband was Judd Nelson. That would have been a better turn.
You see, that would be clever, and we can't have that in this movie.
Yeah.
No, where they just went to the Plototron 3000 and said, here, give us a movie about a girl band in L.A. and enter in these names and these catchphrases. Oh, and if you can just work in some sort of like reference to these things, that'd be great.
Yeah. There's like this, the emotional MacGuffin is that the dad is dead and that he built this little robot thing that doesn't work, basically, until, of course, the girls are discovered on YouTube and are found by Juliette Lewis, who plays Erica Raymond, the immediately clear that she's evil head of Starlight Records.
Yeah.
Who says, okay, I don't really want all of you, but I guess I'm going to have to take all of you instead of just Gem, which is the weirdest. Like, seriously? Like, yeah, because people really prefer solo Rolling Stones albums to the Rolling Stones.
I guess you only have to pay one artist versus paying four. There's more profit to take off.
But so they all go out to L.A., and the moment they get there, apparently the robot is GPS activated, where it says, oh, are we in L.A. now? Okay, I'm on.
Yes.
And turns on to reveal that, in fact, it holds a mystery and a quest where
and
the father has and home movies where the dead father had set it up with a national treasure quest of manipulating various things around L.A. to find new hardware for the robot to make it, which was weird.
To make it just do more stuff, I guess.
Yeah, slightly
better,
more stuff.
Little better.
Yeah, there was never really a moment like, oh, well, this robot clearly wasn't working without these bits.
The robot where they keep saying it's the most powerful computer ever is like that you could buy at Spencer's.
It's basically, it's a BB-8.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, somebody got some advanced viewing of the Star Wars footage and decided to throw a BB-8 in this.
So the tension in this film, such as it is A, that that Juliette Lewis just wants ultimately just Jem and wants to do a very crude version of manipulation to get rid of the rest of the girls. And that tension with Jem and the rest of the girls, when it finally comes down to a crisis moment there, the trailers sell like, oh, Jem gets too big for her britches, but that's not even mildly what happens in this film.
And we have a whole, actually like 2 hours worth of that tension because, you know, from the point where she's like, where they're like, we can't believe you did this to us, after she signs the solo contract, because it's either, you know, this is the moment where I was like, oh my god, this is the metaphor of the movie, because Erica tells her, like, we own the name, we own the costumes, we own the look, we own the songs, we it's own like, Jem.
And I go, well, wait a minute, when
anybody
did you sign
can be
a
Jem.
When did you sign a contract?
You know? But the thing is, she's saying, like, anybody can be Jem. And I'm like, oh, so you mean, like, how the studio owned the name and owned the logo and owned the... And anybody could be Jem, right? So you just took this random, like, group and made them into Jem and the Holograms?
Okay.
Because they're not.
Yeah, there's so many moments that just make no logical sense
throughout
here.
Oh, God, there are plot points in this that are just absurd, so, even for this movie.
So from the time that there's this whole, like, how could you do this to us, sign this contract, blah, 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 to, I'm so sorry, ever since this happened, I've been all torn up, is literally, like, 2 fucking hours.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not
like... This movie
like
is so much longer than it needs to be.
Oh my god, yes. I thought it was going to be like an 80 to 90 minute movie. This thing was almost 2 full hours.
It's almost 2 full hours.
And there are just moments in this that are just head-scratching. It's like, okay, so they, you know, Jem and Kimber grew up and, you know, grew up poor after her father died, but you're looking at all the shit that he's invented. Like, he's created an artificial intelligence.
Essentially,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, and...
Well,
I'm
it's
just,
not that intelligent. It's,
regardless,
it
look
likes
at this thing,
their music.
It is
not
15,
that
it is like 15 years advanced technology for when he's building it. And I'm sitting here thinking, he's like, no, this guy was Steve Jobs. How did they all die poor?
You know, despite how dumb all the plot moments are in here,
and
that's not even close to the worst thing about this movie. The worst thing is just how clumsily manipulative it's trying to be of 12-year-old girls.
Yeah.
I mean, just so clumsy and poorly done, down to the speech where Ryan Guzman, who plays the, you know, the hunkiest hunk that ever hunked, who's the daughter of the son of the
of
Juliette Lewis, Erica, who is actually kind of with the girls, like, oh no, I actually really like what you guys are doing, who gives a speech about how, you know, it's not like it used to be with real music and real performers, and then they prove that they're real performers. Performers, like he's talking about, by singing a terrible song that is clearly not.
Well.
Yeah, but that's not in and of itself enough to give yourself.
Honestly,
yes, this is when music was good.
I have to say that the music was the part of this movie that I had the least trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
True, it was
because
like Demi Lovato, except not.
Yeah, I mean it's supposed to be the sweetest, saccharineest of bubblegum pop music, and that's what it is. It's it's got catchy beats, and you gotta drop a song in there every, you know, 20 minutes or so, because basically you're making a musical on some level here.
And the moments that really had me rolling my eyes so hard I nearly detached a retina is when they, after escaping the police by jumping off the Santa Monica Pier and then apparently standing under the pier because the cops would never think to look under there, they decide to improv a song. And it just became a moment out of Can't Stop the Music.
It was, and Harris actually said, please, no, do stop the music. This is the type of movie that you want to yell out things at the screen because of just the repeatedly, absolutely preposterous, like, things it does in the, and not even in the plot, things just people would never do or say, you know, that you're like, and like, the way it tries to, like, act as if it means something that it doesn't.
Yeah.
There's a speech at the end that was the point I just said, I'm done. I walked out, where Jem's like, I'm not Jem. Everyone who's ever tried to accomplish something and do something with art in their life is Jem. And I was like, fuck you.
Yeah. No, the part where I literally, like, flipped off the screen with both hands was the part where, right at the end, Lindsay Pierce, who was a character from the cartoon, a journalist, comes up to Rio, who is now in charge, and says, hey, these girls are great, I want them. She's in this version, she's the editor of Rolling Stone, and she wants all four of them on the cover. She's like, well, you know, she's Jem, but what is the band called? And he looks over at Synergy, and Synergy's projecting these cute little holograms, and Rio says, how about Jem and the Holograms? And I was like, fuck you, you don't get to name the band. Like, because it went from basically being like a female empowerment, like, you know, Jerrica was not the shrinking Violet in the cartoon that she is in the movie. You know, she was in charge of the whole thing. They created this. This is their creation 100%. And now, oh, look, Rio's in charge of everything to the point where he even gets to name the band. No. Fuck you.
Well, I think the upshot of this is whether you're a big fan of the cartoon and you love that, or you've never even heard of the cartoon, either way, you're going to despise this film.
Yeah. And I figured it out about halfway through. This actually could have been a good movie if they had not tried to shoehorn in the gem parts.
Yeah, it was Josie and the Pussycats.
Well,
they had any humor in it. There's no humor in this film.
There's no nothing in this.
Yeah, it's like it tries to have humor in the way that feels like 14-year-olds that are about to sell you on McDonald's in a television commercial. That level of humor.
Yeah.
Like, nothing at all that feels like real, like, we actually wrote a joke here.
Yeah.
You know?
I was going into this, like, you know, as a fan from way back, like, I was literally there on the first day, you know, I was thinking, like, all right, well, maybe this is going to be a cute little movie for what it is. Maybe, you know, it'll just, on its own merits, I was really hoping to see a movie that on its own merits, barring all of the stuff about Jem that they were getting wrong, I was hoping it was going to be a good, cute little movie for, like, the tween set. But, and I'm sure there are going to be tweens out there who are going to enjoy this. The parents.
Probably more on the twee than the teen side.
Mm. Yeah. This is really like maybe the 8 to 10 year olds like this.
Completely. I can't imagine. There's like cynicism is growing in our teenagers younger and younger. And if you haven't, like, any amount of awareness of the world around you, or you've seen a movie, you're going to go.
If you know how good stories are told,
you're going to realize how quickly that this is cinematic gruel that's being fed to you out of a processor of people going from, like, looking at branding who couldn't even be bothered to really even care about this movie enough to do that well.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone in this movie actually wanted to be there. You could actually see Juliette Lewis going like, I am actually better than this.
And if
I need to collect the paycheck and leave.
If Juliette Lewis is saying that, you know it's bad.
But you know what? I have to say, overall, the acting was quite good and, you know, like, for what they were given.
Yeah, the heights of competent.
They did a good job. I mean, at no point was I looking at any of the actors or actresses and saying, like, oh, good Lord, just, you know, aside from the, you can tell, Juliette Lewis is chewing the scenery. And she gets through it by chewing the scenery.
Well, because all the dialogue everyone is given are things that no human being has ever uttered out loud in real life. And she was the one person who seemed to realize, if I don't play this bigger than life, it's going to come off as completely wooden.
Yeah.
Everyone else tries to play it like straight.
Super earnest.
Yeah, and it just doesn't work at all.
It doesn't work, but they did their jobs pretty well.
Which,
like, at no point did I look at this and go like, oh God, come on, can't you act? Like, you know,
I said, can't you write over and over again.
Yeah, they did their jobs the way I'm sure the director wanted them to. And they gave it a lot of effort. You can tell that they did actually, the people on camera put a lot of effort into it. They probably put more effort into it than anybody else.
And this is directed, in fact, by John M. Chu.
Who can go fuck himself.
Yeah, who has done one movie I liked, Step Up 3D. Other than that, G.I. Joe Retaliation was amusingly terrible.
And the thing that bothers me is, okay, in the 80s, several cartoons were unofficially part of the same universe, the Sunbow universe, where G.I. Joe, Inhumanoids, Jem and the Holograms, and Transformers were all unofficially and then later confirmed to be in the same universe. So at the beginning of this movie, I was joking, hey, it's the director of a G.I. Joe movie. Maybe that means that they're going to continue the tradition and, like, The Rock is going to show up in this and, like, make this movie part of the G.I. Joe universe. And God help me,
The Rock shows up. Well, he didn't necessarily make it part of the G.I. Joe universe, but it was The Rock. There was that point where it was like, Jimmy Kimmel does a thing in here, and I was like, There is no film that's supposed to take place in our present day that Jimmy Kimmel will not take a paycheck to sit down and go do a fake interview about that movie, trying to make it real world. Like, seriously, it's happened like 40 times since he got a show. It's like, wow, you are the biggest whore in Hollywood.
He'll do anything. That's how he got his job.
Yeah.
Because he was willing to say, he just said yes over and over and over
again. I'm willing to respect that because he wasn't actually in the movie. He had nothing to do with this.
Well, let's, guys, we got to go to final thoughts here. Kat, why don't you go ahead and start with that.
My final thoughts are, if you want a new interpretation of Jem, go read the IDW comics, which are fantastic and which do what this movie really should have done if it had actually wanted to be a movie that updated Jem and the Holograms. But it obviously didn't want to be that. It was obviously a script that had that was pre-existing, that they did a find and replace with the names and added in a few more elements to try to make it Jem and the Holograms. I think if they had kept all the Jem elements out of it, if they had tried to make a cute little movie about a girl band, it could have been successful. As it is, this is a steaming pile of shit, and I really wanted to like it. I give it... Out of 10, I will give this negative 5. I'm trying to think of something. Negative 5 limp lizards.
There you go.
You'll only understand that if you saw the original cartoon.
Don't watch the movie, though.
Don't watch this movie.
Harris?
I came to this not expecting a good movie and, in fact, was looking forward to ripping it a new hole. And, honestly, I came out of this having... For me, growing up in the 80s, Jem was the cartoon that came on that I had to sit through if I wanted to watch Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So I, you know, picked up about the show through osmosis, but for the most part have no real interest or love for it other than occasionally making fun of the really ridiculous parts. And this is a movie that managed to exceed even my lowest expectations in terribleness. This, in terms of just actively insulting the audience's intelligence. There is a plot point, and I'm really not spoiling anything because spoilers are kind of beyond the point of this movie, where Jem and Rio have to break into Starlight Music in order to get, you know, get a MacGuffin. There is literally no reason for them to have to break in.
Not only
is the MacGuffin so unimportant
that there is... The MacGuffin shouldn't have been there in the first place!
There is no reason why Jem couldn't have just gone up to Erica and said, hey, can I have this bag? And Erica would have no reason to say, yeah, sure.
Because she has attached no value to it.
Yeah, but more than that...
She's attached no value to it, yet she's put it in a safe with her most valuable jewels and a copy of a will.
But not only that, but... They established very early on, Rio is Erica Raymond's son. He has every legitimate reason to be there. There is no reason that he can't quite literally walk through the front door.
And the movie's loaded with moments like that.
This whole thing is just awful from top to finish. I resent the fact that dinosaurs died to make the oil that created the celluloid that this was filmed on.
Don't feel bad. I'm sure that no celluloid copies were printed of this film.
This is 100% digital.
And the only thing I can think is that John Chu did Never Say Never, which is the Justin Bieber story, which is basically the Jem story except with a dude, Jem the movie. So he really just, I think, took that exact same script, replay, started it over, and this is how we ended up with this steaming pile. So I am giving it 2 out of 10 better cartoons that I wanted to watch this Saturday morning.
Yeah, this is just absolutely unnecessary. It's the worst movie I've seen this year in that it's so passionless, it's... Just, there's no creativity injected into any part of this. What songs there were in here, the pop songs that are competently written for bad pop songs, basically, in my opinion, are almost certainly pre-existing songs that were sitting in a file somewhere that they were just waiting for the right artist to drop them off on. There's no reason to see this film, not even to laugh at it. I give this 0 out of 10 good career moves by Molly Ringwald.